So some more adventures in the Heritage neighborhood. Last night, there was some noise, and I looked out to see it sounded like branches, and my neighbors, it's 4 a.m. This is, of course, a good time to start a little bonfire, a little cabin fire, and they were trying to get it started. That wasn't such a big deal. But then I looked in the alley, and someone else was doing the same thing in the alley. There was a fire there in the middle, and they were starting to throw more things in it. I have no idea what they were thinking. They may not have known what they were thinking. But I didn't feel like going out, so I called 911. I don't know if you've ever called 911. It's a little distracting as you're looking at a growing fire to walk through all the questions that they want you to answer. Where are you calling from? What's the address? And what's the address of the emergency? What's your name? Your pets? The questions seem to go on and on. You're thinking, this fire is getting bigger. And then they said, we'll transfer you to the fire department. And then I had to go through that again. And everything was fine. As soon as he heard sirens, he started to kick it out and ran away. It's distracting, though, when you see the fire to look anywhere else. And I wonder if something like that happens as we hear the story, this final lesson of Jesus. We hear the words eternal fire, eternal punishment, and we find it hard to hear anything else Jesus says or look anywhere else in this passage. And whether for one reason or another we get focused on those words, I will say this. To be fair enough, it is a final warning to us and to everyone. Jesus began with his first sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, with a promises of blessing, the promises of a new world that is coming. And here in the Sermon on the Mount of Olives, he ends with this memorable warning to us. But I will say this, the fire is not intended for human beings. Was not created there for us. Now, we could spend a lot of time looking through all the other examples here and what this means and get into the words, these words, what does eternal mean and what does fire mean? There is a Learning for Life class coming up that Reed is going to lead on hell and heaven and a couple weeks with me. Yes, I'm surprising you. So if you're curious and you want to hear more about these words and what the range of things that the church has thought about them, I encourage you to come to Learning for Life at 9:30 the next coming Sundays. But looking away from the fire, there is a few things that we don't want to miss. We are celebrating Easter, the teaching and the miracles of Jesus that reveal the truth about the world that Jesus loves and gave his life for, and the kingdom that he is bringing in through his death and resurrection, through his ascension and his return one day. There are things we don't want to miss here. Jesus said a few things about the kingdom being established from the world, the beginning of the world, and Jesus says a few things here about relationship that I want us to notice, and the connections between the kingdom and human relationships. Jesus said that God's plan for human beings from the very beginning, from the foundation of the world, is the kingdom. That is God's only purpose and God's only plan. God has been preparing this kingdom for humanity from the very beginning. His purpose is that heaven would come to earth, that God would come and live among mortals. When you have a home to build, you build a foundation that is suitable for the structure that will be above it. The foundation has to be the right kind and size and strength. And it says, Jesus teaches us here that God laid a foundation within creation that could handle the kingdom coming down to earth. The foundations of this world were built for the kingdom. The world was made in such a way that God's kingdom would come. That is God's only intention for creation. All of history, therefore, is moving without fail towards the fulfillment of God's purpose, that the kingdom would come and that God's reign would be established on earth. This is the direction that all things are going. And therefore, if we don't end up there, it is because we have actively turned away. I don't know if you know anybody who has just just a complete lack of an ability to find their way on roads. No sense of direction whatsoever. They say, I need to go to Calgary. You take them down to Highway 1. You point west. You say, just go straight here. But if they end up in Winnipeg, you would say, how did you do that? How is it even possible? You were on the road, it was heading towards Calgary, and you went somehow in completely the wrong direction. It must have been a man. Refused to turn around, right? It is the same thing with life. We are meant for the kingdom. That is the direction that all things are headed. But we like sheep, have gone astray. Each one of us has turned to our own way. But that doesn't change God's purposes. It does explain the source of our discomfort in the sense that things aren't right in our world as we try to find our way back to the calling that we had in the beginning. Jesus calls the kingdom our inheritance. And once again, to receive your inheritance, all you have to do is, well, stay, remain in right relationship. To lose the inheritance, you have to actively leave. You have to walk away from it. You have to depart in some way. Again, we might want to look back at the eternal fire and be worried about that. But these are not meant to be equal options for all people that we might choose between. God's purposes are to bless us and to give us this inheritance. In this final lesson of Jesus in Matthew, we stay or we leave the kingdom. We receive what is meant for us or we reject our inheritance. And this, I think, interestingly matches parallels that people either stay or leave the relationships they have with other human beings. They either stay or remain connected, or they turn away from other people and don't see them. And ultimately, they are turning away from God. Some people stay connected in this story, lovingly to other people. They stay in relationship. But the other people are unconnected and remain out of relationship. It is natural for us to read this lesson of Jesus and to think that maybe he is trying to solve the problems that people have. Someone is hungry, we will feed them. Someone is thirsty, we'll give them something to drink. Or to make the world a better place. But if we listen carefully, the goal is that people would be in relationship with each other. That people would love each other. It is only when you know somebody, when you take the time to listen and to know them, that you begin to discover what it is that they need. I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I need clothing. I'm sick, I'm in prison, I'm a newcomer, an immigrant. And it is only by responding to these needs as you know them that you can remain friends or grow in friendship. So there are some in Jesus' lesson who do this. They're in the relationship, they hear about the needs, and they meet them. And in doing so, they come to know Jesus more. But there are some who not only do not hear the need, they don't help the person, but it is actually as if they cannot even see the other person. When did we see you? When did we hear you ask for these things? There are some people who turn away from relationships and turn away from other people. And when we do this, we are turning away from God. We are turning away from the kingdom and from our human inheritance. If we go back to the things that the people who did help, what was it they did? I'm always drawn to those three doings. You feed the hungry. You provided a drink to those who were thirsty. Clothing for those who lacked it. And there's a reason I think that I'm attracted to those things. They're concrete. When I've done it, I can check the box. I have made a difference. I can see the difference. The need is met. It's measurable. It's done. The job is complete. But there are three other actions that Jesus speaks of that are simply demanding our presence, that we would be company for another person. And this requires visiting, sitting, and listening. And this is something that is never done. And the impact isn't clear. It's hard to measure. Now, if we were visited by somebody who gives us the strong impression that we are a task that they have to complete, it just doesn't feel right. At the best, it feels like a waste of time. At the worst, it feels hurtful and destructive. We want someone to visit with us because they want to visit with us, to listen to us and be with us, to know us. But sometimes we can do things as part of a list, just like those more tangible tasks. We have a sense of wanting to be a good person, and we want to be able to say, I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this. But when we do that with other people, it can just feel like we are acting like we care. Or to use the word that Jesus used frequently throughout the Gospels, we are hypocrites, play actors. No, the goal is not just to say that you visited and to feel satisfied afterwards. If we do that, again to quote Jesus, we have received our reward in full. But what Jesus is clearly after here in all of these actions is real relationship, genuine love, and caring for one another. Consider again the people who were welcomed into the kingdom. Like any good friend, like anyone who was motivated only by their love for someone else, they had visited, they had shared meals, they had met these needs, all without even thinking of it. Really? When did I do that? I don't remember. And isn't that what friends say to each other? You did this for me. Did I? I don't remember. Or, come on, of course I did that. You would have done the same thing. It was nothing. What Jesus is proposing is far greater challenge than just offering a meal or a glass of water. Jesus is challenging us in every one of our encounters throughout our day to have a sense, to pursue a sense of relationship and connection with every person you meet. When we first decided to, with the churches of Regina, to host a luncheon here, I have to admit I was nervous about it. I have often seen these sorts of meals be the means of killing relationships, where we have people providing food and someone receiving food. Both people can fall into the trap of not seeing the other person as a person. They come and they see the other person as someone to take something from, and the other person sees it as someone they would benevolently bless beneath them. But there are little moments that I've seen in the lunches here on Saturdays when folks on both sides have broken through that barrier and to the place of mutual sharing. And if you talk to the people who are there every Saturday from our congregation, you would hear stories of mutual sharing, of people bringing gifts of food to share. People have shared personal stories and connections, birthdays, engagements, and illnesses. In short, it has become the means of real relationship. And thanks be to God for that, because in the kingdom, there will be no hiding from one another. The kingdom will be a place of relationship. We cannot avoid each other. Thanks to Cheryl, we were reminded the need to forgive now as we prepare for that place where we will be forced to live with one another closely. What can we do? What are some of the habits we can practice each day? If you are receiving anything throughout your day from anyone you meet, whether it is a gift to you, or whether it is a service that you are paying for, or whether you are purchasing something and they are helping you to buy it, or whether someone is doing you a favor, see the person who is serving you. See the one who is giving it. Let us not be demanding and ungrateful. Let us not say, I am the customer, I deserve this. Let us not say, I am the one paying, here's what needs to be done for me. Don't let the person be invisible to you either. I'd rather see them. Let us be thankful. Let us be peace-sharing people. And if you are the one giving, in the same way, see the other person that you are gifting. If you are at work and serving someone, do it not because you are being paid or told to, but because this is your chance to serve another human being and draw closer to Jesus. This helps us, in both cases, to grow in our ability to love one another. It is not only the kingdom that we are moving toward, it is Jesus Christ himself. We were meant to know him. We were meant to live with him. He says in this parable to all humanity and to each one of you, he says, come. That is always his purpose and his invitation every day. Come to me. This is what you were meant for. This is what all of us were meant for together. Our relationship with others is connected to our relationship with Jesus. When we love others, when we serve others and receive from others, we are drawing closer to Jesus himself. And Jesus said, whatever you do for the least, you have done for me. But if there is someone you cannot love, you do not know the love of God. You are turning away from Jesus. And if some of you are still thinking about that eternal fire, let's go back to the epistle lesson, which is Derek read for us from 1 John chapter 4. The gospel passage and the epistle passage are connected in this way. They are the only times in the entire New Testament that this word punishment is used. It's something to consider. And John wrote this in his letter. If you are focused on the punishment, you do not know God's love. So this is Jesus' invitation to love everyone you meet and through that, know Jesus more. But it begins with hearing Jesus' invitation to come and to know his love in your daily prayers, in your daily service, in our gathering together. Amen.